The year was 2012. I was 18 years old, fresh out of high school, and a student at a community college in Iowa. At this point in my life, college for me was more of a facade, something that gave the impression that I was somebody who was going places. But the reality was, I was spending most of my days hanging out with my buddies, smoking marijuana, an activity I picked up in high school. And it was something that really, it enslaved me. I let it enslave me. I was fine with that. It was something that I identified with, something that I centered my whole world around. If you asked me back then, Jake, tell me something about yourself, it would come out in conversation eventually. Sooner rather than later, yeah, I smoke weed just about every day. But in 2012, that lifestyle caught up to me in a way that I was not ready for. I had spent that summer hanging out with a friend, and we were selling weed to people in Atlantic, Iowa. And that September, we thought we were on top of the world. We thought we were, you know, beating the law. We were dumb kids. That September, I started getting text messages from a police officer saying things like, hey, I know what you've been doing, and I'm going to need you to give me some names of people, and the whole thing will go away. If names and the whole thing goes away, or no names, and you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And I was like, no, he's bluffing. There's no way. I know how Atlantic cops work. There's no way. And so I ignored it. Well, he wasn't bluffing. And I found myself in November 2012 sitting in a southwestern Iowa jail cell. The charge was delivery of a controlled substance, a felony in, I'm sure, most states, definitely in Iowa. And it was over. My life was over. I was 18 years old, facing a felony. I was going to spend 5 years in prison, and that was it. I was going to struggle to find a job, struggle to get back into college or whatever. Any semblance of a good life was going to be hard for me from this point on. But that night in that jail cell, I learned something that changed my life forever. And I think if we can get it this morning, I think it can change yours as well. You see, up to this point in my life, God was more of a rule enforcer. He was more concerned with telling me not to do this or do that. Don't do this and definitely don't do that. He was somebody who was more interested in condemning me in my mind than somebody who was interested in saving me. He definitely wasn't somebody I thought was going to be involved in my rescue plan. Most definitely not going to be the person who initiates it. But there I was. I was out of options. So I just prayed this weak prayer. Something like, God, if you're even there, could you just show up? That'd be great. And show up he did. That January, I got a phone call from my lawyer, and he said, Jake, forget about your court dates. You're good to go. There was a kind of kink in the system. Somehow I guess the law in Iowa says that once you arrest somebody, you have about 45 days to file the paperwork, and the court waited 60, and my lawyer was able to get me off the hook. Charges dropped. It's like nothing ever happened. And to me, that moment, I realized, oh my goodness. It wasn't lost on me. God actually responded when I prayed. And it started for me a journey of giving God things. First it was the drugs, and now I stand before you 4.5 years clean. And then it was, yeah, thanks. But it was also things that I didn't even know enslaved me. Cycles of sin that just caught me for years. And he's saying, like, God, like, Jake, give me that. That? Are you sure? Yeah, give it to me. Okay, here it is. Gone. And it's this process of just becoming a new person. You see, what I learned was that God was in fact willing to deliver people from slavery, the slavery to sin, when they cry out to him. But I still had no idea how far he was going to go. My name is Jacob Sammons. I'm on staff here at Reality Church. If you're new with us, you picked a fantastic week to be here. We're so glad you're here. We're on week 2 of our series called Within Reach. Basically what this is it's part of a movement that we're a part of with other churches in the area where we've said, hey, instead of working against each other, we're going to lock arms and we're going to try and reach our city together. We think if we work together, then Omaha is within reach. And so in these weeks leading up to Easter, we're just looking at what is within reach for us believers in light of who Jesus is. If at any time during this message you have any questions, you can follow the instructions on the screen, or you can download our mobile app and ask a longer question there. It should be under more sermon polls and questions. You should find it there. And I'll do my best to get some of those answered at the end here. So whether your story is like mine or the exact opposite, really, it doesn't matter wherever your life has taken you. You've probably learned by now that we as people have a problem. We cannot stop doing what we know we shouldn't be doing. It could be really anything for you. It could be in the way that you talk to people, talk about people when they're not there. Maybe some of the habits that you have when nobody's looking, or the ways that you relieve stress. As people, we cannot seem to figure out how to stop sinning or how to stop being enslaved in something. If you don't believe me, just try to stop. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. But what if, well, before I get to that, a lot of times when we find ourselves in places like that, well, we're stuck. We've got a problem. The way that we respond to that, more often than not, is I've got this problem, so I've got to pull myself out of this. I got to figure out how to get out of this. I got to be better, do better, whatever. I just got to fix this. It all, in our minds, it all rests on us. And the problem with that, it sounds great, but the problem with it is that when it all rides on us, God becomes distant. And we begin to see him as somebody that, man, he doesn't really care that much about my life. He doesn't really care that much about being a part of my rescue, about freeing me. Freedom, when we look at it that way, is on us. But what if that lesson that I learned in 2012, what if that's true? What if God is, in fact, willing to deliver people from slavery when they cry out to him? In fact, let's make it even sweeter. What if God would stop at nothing to deliver his people from slavery? How could that change things for us? What are some things that maybe you never thought you could be free from, but now you maybe you could? How could that change the way you interact with people at work or your family? Like, how could that be a game changer for you? There was a time in the history of the nation of Israel where they found themselves enslaved. And this isn't like the exact same type of slavery I've been talking about so far. This is like chains on the wrist slavery. The way that you think about slavery when you think of slavery, this is that. There had been a pharaoh, a king in Egypt, who came up and he was a very insecure guy. And he saw how big Israel was. And he was like, there's no way. They're gonna overthrow me and my throne. I'm not going to let it happen. I'm going to crush them. I'm going to oppress them. So he enslaved them. And we read in the book of Exodus the story of God raising up Moses, saying, Moses, you're going to be my guy that's going to go and lead my people out of slavery. And we see this cycle of Moses coming to Pharaoh and saying, Pharaoh, let my people go, or a plague's going to happen. And Pharaoh's like, nah, I don't really want to. And then a plague happens. And then Moses comes back, Pharaoh, let my people go, or there's going to be something bad that happens. And Pharaoh's like, I don't really feel like it, not today. And a plague happens. And it's a cycle over and over and over again. And we see the water in Egypt turn to blood. We see locusts infest the land and flies infest the land and their livestock die. And it's getting pretty bad, but yet the Israelites are still enslaved. And so God, what we're going to be looking at today is God bringing one last plague to the land of Egypt. If you have your Bibles and you want to turn with me to Exodus chapter 12, we'll be looking at verses 28 through 38 in the NLT. And as you're turning to there, I just want to give you a kind of an idea of what's happening in the rest of Exodus 12. So this is a paraphrase, by the way, but basically what's happening is God says to Moses, hey, there's going to be one more plague, and it's going to be a bad one, but I'm about to send it. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to send the angel of death around Egypt, the whole nation of Egypt. And what's going to happen is that when he passes over a house, the firstborn son in that house and their livestock are going to die. That's what's going to happen. But for Israel, here's what I want you to do. Every household in Israel, I want you guys to take a male lamb, 1 year old, spotless lamb. I want you to hold on to him for 4 days. On the fourth day, the whole nation of Israel is going to kill that lamb, put his blood on their doorpost, take the lamb, eat the lamb, be dressed and ready to go. My angel of death is going to come around Egypt. When he sees the blood of the lamb on the doorpost, he's going to pass over that house and go to the next. And then be ready to go because I'm going to lead you guys out of Egypt. And so Moses goes and he tells the Israelites, and he warns Pharaoh one last time. And that's where we pick up verse 28. It's go time. Here it is. So the people of Israel did just as the Lord had commanded through Moses and Aaron. And that night at midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn sons in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn son of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn son of the prisoner in the dungeon. Even the firstborn of their livestock were killed. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the people of Egypt woke up during the night, and a loud wailing was heard throughout the land of Egypt. There was not a single house, not a single house where somebody had not died. Guys, can you imagine that? Not a single house. I feel like sometimes when we read this passage, when we have this passage read to us, it's like, oh, good. God is judging Egypt. They deserve that. They're enslaving Israel. They're the bad guys in the story. So good job. But can you imagine if this was to happen in America? Like, you walk out of your house one morning, and your neighbor's house, and that neighbor, and on this side, and across the street, the whole neighborhood, the whole city, the whole country, somebody in every house has died. Can you imagine how devastating that would be? And the Egyptians, they're destroyed. Like, they are beside themselves, just like we would be if that happened. And this is how, even Pharaoh was that way. Here's how he responds. Verse 31. Pharaoh sent for Moses and Aaron during the night. During the night. He didn't even wait till morning. During the night, he says, get out. Leave my people and take the rest of the Israelites with you. Go and worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds, as you said, and be gone. Go, but bless me. Like, get a load of this guy. I really can't stand this. Get out of my face, but bless me as you go. Whatever. Anyways, all the Egyptians urged the people of Israel to get out of the land as quickly as possible, for they thought, we will all die. The Egyptians had seen all this before. God promises to do something. Pharaoh is stubborn and doesn't listen. Something bad happens. Over and over and over again, and they've had it. They're not about to risk it any longer. They're saying, get out. Just leave. Go. We're not going to risk this anymore. Even if Pharaoh doesn't say go, go, get, we've seen it happen. God's going to promise something bad to happen. Pharaoh's going to be stubborn, and something bad's going to happen. Imagine that. And we see in the verses following this, God tells Moses to tell Israel, hey, ask the Egyptians for their jewelry, for their clothes, and all of their stuff, really. And this is where we pick up verse 36. The Lord caused the Egyptians to look favorably on the Israelites, and they gave the Israelites whatever they asked for. So they stripped the Egyptians of their wealth. That night, the people of Israel left Ramses and started for Succoth. There were about 600,000 men, plus all the women and children. A rabble of non-Israelites went with them, along with great flocks and herds of livestock. This whole thing, the 10 plagues before this one in particular, the Passover, when we look at this, it could kind of seem like, wow, like that's almost like this big temper tantrum, right? Like God's just throwing this holy temper tantrum, like, why won't you listen to me, Pharaoh? I'm so sick of you. I'm just going to kill your kids. But it's not that. It's not really that. We read in Exodus chapter 4, God saying that Israel is his son. So what we have here is God delivering his son, Israel, from the hands of the one who has oppressed them for over 400 years. And I want us to notice a couple of things about this. Two things, really. The first thing is this. Notice the way that God brought them out of Egypt. He did wait till midnight, but he didn't just wait till the middle of the night and just sneak them out the back door. Like, shh, don't tell anybody. Go, go, go. No. The people of Egypt were begging them, get out here. Take our jewelry. Take our money. Take everything. Just leave. Go. And so here's the Israelites who have been in slavery for 400 years walking out the front door of slavery with more wealth than they had entered in with, triumphantly. God not only delivered his people from slavery, but he did so triumphantly. And the second thing I want us to notice is this. When we think of the Israelites, just like I said earlier when we talk about the Egyptians, like those are the bad guys in the Bible when we read this story, that's kind of what we think, but Israelites, those are the good people, right? That's God's people, his chosen people. But I want us to realize that the Israelites, were not necessarily exempt from this plague. Just because they were Israelites doesn't mean that they got spared. It was in the instructions. Hey, take the blood of the lamb, put it on your doorpost. Guys, there was probably some Israelites who didn't listen to that and lost their lives in the Passover. And on the flip side, there were probably some Egyptians who were in a house that had the blood of the lamb on the door, and they were spared. There were probably some really good, upstanding Egyptian citizens who were spared in this, or who died, in this Passover. And there were probably some really bad Israelites, really bad people, rotten people who were spared. It had nothing to do with the race, Israelite or Egyptian. It had nothing to do with their economic status, rich or poor. It had nothing to do with even how good or bad they were. The only thing that made a difference in the Passover, whether you're spared or not, is did they trust in God's chosen instrument of salvation? Did they trust what Moses said? Did they put the blood of the lamb on the door? If they did, it's going to be an all right night. If they didn't, it's going to be a really rotten night. And I think what's at the heart of all of this, when we look at the way that, God delivers his people here, is that God will, here I got this right here actually, God will stop at nothing to deliver his people from slavery. I think that's the truth of the Passover. And I think the Passover kind of proved it, didn't it? Like killing the firstborn of every house in Egypt, that's pretty drastic. That is pretty drastic indeed. But the Passover, while it was good and effective, it only delivered the Israelites from Egypt. Like, yeah, they're free from Egypt, but you watch and you track their story, and they go and they wander in the wilderness for the next 40 years. They're still trapped in sin. They're a free people that's living this life of slavery. They've just been freed from Egypt, but now they're still living this life of rebellion. Even though God just miraculously brought them out of slavery, they still rebel against him and spend the next 40 years in the wilderness. And it kind of goes to show that, man, they were delivered from this kind of slavery, but they were still stuck. They still couldn't seem to figure it out. Nobody can seem to figure it out. And then 2,000 years ago, God basically, in my mind anyways, he says, look, Israel, look, listen. You remember the Passover? How I delivered you from slavery and all that, and I set up a festival for you to remember that. I'm going to take that, and I'm going to up the ante a little bit. I'm going to do this for real. I'm going to put all my chips in the middle. I'm going to do this for real this time. I'm going to set you free from sin, from yourself, from death. I'm going to do this for real this time. And we see Jesus come on the scene. Now, something really important here. Jesus was perfect. The reason that's important is because the Bible says that the wages of sin is death. So that means when we sin against God, the consequence of that is death. Sin equals death. Sin equals death. Every single time. Not a slap on the wrist, not jail time. Sin equals death. But yet here we find Jesus, the perfect one, the only one who never knew sin, and we find him hanging on a cross. Do you see the problem with this? Like, why is he here? This is not how it should be. This is scandalous. Why is he here? Why is he here? But the truth of the matter is he is here because he, Jesus, is like this new Passover, this new sacrifice, God's rescue plan, once and for all, hanging on a cross, taking all of our sin, all of our guilt, all of our shame, and putting it on himself. 3 days later, something else happened. Jesus, the same one who had just hung on a cross, the perfect one, gets up and walks out of his grave. And in doing that, he proves that he had just conquered sin and death. So now the ones who place their faith in him, sin no longer has a hold on them. Death no longer has the last word. Guys, that is great news, but it gets even better. Jesus promised he's coming back. And one day when he comes back, he's going to take all of the people who believed in him and lead them once and for all, triumphantly, out of slavery. Guys, that's great news, isn't it? Isn't it? You guys didn't seem that excited about it. I was excited. And there's some people in the room who needed to hear that. Right? Because I don't know where you're at. But I would bet money, honestly. I'm not a gambling man, but I would bet that there are people in this room who are caught in this cycle of sin. I don't know what it is for you. Maybe it's pornography, maybe it's drugs, maybe it's something else. It really doesn't matter what it is. The point is you're stuck. And maybe you feel like you can pull yourself out of this. Maybe you feel like you have to pull yourself out of this. Or maybe you feel like, man, is there even any way out of this at all? Maybe for you, church is just kind of, you're here this morning, but it's kind of like a last-ditch thing, like, well, I'm just here because something's got to change. And I don't really know if God's even interested in helping if somebody like me, but I've got to give it a shot. Maybe you think that God is far off, distant. He's not really that interested in saving somebody like you. He's not really interested in getting into the dirt of your life. But guys, there is an empty tomb in the city of Jerusalem that would beg to differ with that. Guys, if that's you, if you're in this room and you feel like you have no hope, Jesus came into our situation. God didn't stay far off. He came into our situation, took all of our guilt, all of our shame, all of our sin, sin that we haven't even committed yet. He took it all on himself and paid the price of death. And the only way to receive that gift that he's given us, this freedom, this right relationship with God, this freedom from sin, this freedom from death, the only way to receive that is the same way as it was with the Passover. Trust in God's chosen instrument of salvation. Place your faith in Jesus. That's the only way. You're not going to get out of this on your own. And so if that's you, I just want to challenge you to do whatever you got to do, research, whatever. But would you take steps towards placing your faith in Jesus? That is by far, I guarantee you, the best choice you'll ever make in your entire life. For the rest of us, we know that Jesus died on the cross. I mean, we're church people. We hear about it all the time. Jesus paid for our sins. Some of us have been hearing that since we were little kids, like that big. But how often do we actually remember this? Like, how often is it in the front of our mind? How often is this the thing that we let channel, or what? How often is this the thing that we let filter through our lives? Like, how often do we let it transform us and kind of dictate the things that we do? I have a few things here. I'm struggling. Bear with me. Thank you, guys. You're awesome. So how often do we keep this in our mind? Because it's one thing to be like, oh, yeah, Jesus died for me. But then you go off, and guys, I struggle with this too. Like, there are days, just being 100% honest with you, there are days when that is not even a thought in my head. I'm just going to work. I'm doing homework because I'm a college student still. I'm doing all this stuff, and it's not even a thought in my head that, wow, Jesus, God, went that far for me? Like, he literally gave everything for me. He literally stopped at nothing. And sometimes I don't remember that. And I want to challenge us, if that's you, if you're with me, everybody that is in this room, let's be a people who remember that truth. And let it change us. Let it be the truth that we live our lives based off of. So there's a few things I want to give us to do that, to help us do that today. First one is be baptized. This sounds out of place, right? But the thing is that baptism, it doesn't save you, but it's a way to remember with the whole congregation what Jesus has done for you. It's a way for you to proclaim externally an internal truth, that you're following Jesus, that you've trusted in him. And so if that's you today, if you've never been baptized, maybe you've been a believer for 20 years, maybe for 20 seconds, wherever you're at on that, and we're having baptisms right out there today. And I just want to challenge you, like, hey, we have everything you need. There's no reason to not take that first step of obedience. So if that's you, would you just head out there today? We've got some people that will get you set up with that. And we would love as a church to celebrate that with you and to remember that with you. So if that's you, would you do that? The second thing is this, connect with God. Connect with God. You guys will remember December 31st, New Year's Eve, I got up here and I spoke to you guys about resetting with God. I issued the 60-60 challenge, where for the next 60 days from that point, every hour, every 60 minutes, the challenge was to connect with God, whether it be an alarm on your phone, whether it be downloading the Soul Revolution app, which I hear is not very good on iPhones or Apple. It's Sorry about that. I have an Android, so I don't have to worry about it. It's pretty cool. But let's not, that challenge is technically over. Technically it is. But let's still be that type of person, that type of people, that connect, make it a habit to connect with God every single day, every hour even. It only takes like 5 seconds. Set alarms on your phone. Download the Beat Me app. If you have an Android, like most cool people, you should download the Soul Revolution app. It's honestly a great tool. And the third thing is this. Have a one more. Something we do at Reality Church. And the kind of heartbeat behind it is this. Look, we know, we've been talking about this today, that God stopped at nothing to deliver us from slavery. Freedom with Jesus is within reach. But there are people in our community who are close to us, but far from God. People who have no idea that freedom is even a possibility for them. They're stuck. They were desperately hoping, wishing that somebody would tell them, show them a way to freedom. And it's kind of like the Apostle Paul says, how will they know if nobody tells them? Guys, we have people who are close to us and far from God. Who is that for you? And would you make it a goal, not to beat them over the head with the Bible, but to lovingly show them, share your life with them, share your story with them. Say, hey, this is what Jesus has done for me. Won't you follow? So I know stuff like this probably brings up a lot of questions. If you haven't texted those in yet, go ahead and do so now. And I'll do my best to get these answers. If God just did this drastic act to free the slaves, why did he make them wander in the desert for 40 years? Does he do that to us when we are freed? That's a great question. I would say for the first part of it, at least, the Israelites in the wilderness had made an idol. So Moses had gone up to the mountaintop to talk to God, and the Israelites were like, oh, I know what's a good idea. Why don't we make like a golden cow? That's the God that led us out of slavery. Stupid, right? Like, no, it's not. Clearly, you just made it. But that's what they did. And so that was God's, I guess, punishment for them. I don't know necessarily that he does that for us. But I don't know. That's kind of a tough question. I do know this, though, that sometimes even though we are free, that is our status, we are free, we don't always live that way. And I think there are consequences of that. We're still saved, we're still free, but, you know, sin has some consequences to it in this life that we'll have to endure. So I hope that clears that up. I hope that doesn't make anything cloudy. If it does, come talk to me afterwards. I am in more bondage right now to the things I know I should be doing, but I'm choosing not to, things like in the Word, finding a one more tithing exercise, etc. I feel stuck just on the edge of moving forward with discipline. Do you have any tips for getting unstuck? Do you have any tips? Yeah. So for me, what was really helpful in those kind of early months coming out of drug use, coming out of all sorts of sin, my situation was, I don't know what your situation is, but I had to like completely redo my friends group. Like I got rid of all of my friends except for maybe one, like that, and it was kind of crazy. But I spent most of my time just praying, searching after God, giving him things like take this sin. That was the big part about getting unstuck, was just continuously giving that to him. It was more than just reading my Bible and praying all the time. It was actually seeking out, like, hey, God, show me how to live this freed life. Show me how to actually live that out. And going to him like that in prayer, for me, that was huge. Also, being in a life group will help with that because you have people coming around you and helping you be accountable. So that's my tips for that. Be in a life group, pray and ask God to show you how to live that freed life. And it might be time to rethink some of the people that are in your life, too. So, as you read in Exodus 12:38, why would a rabble of non-Israelites go along with them as they left Egypt? That's a good question. Well, I think part of it might be what I was saying earlier about how there were probably some Egyptians who were spared in the Passover. Probably some Egyptians who saw everything that God was doing and wanted to be a part of that community. That was not a very rare thing to do. You just look at throughout the whole Old Testament, there's people, non-Israelites, who joined the Israelite community because of God. Israel was supposed to be, from the beginning, this nation that was going to be a light for the rest of the world. They weren't just supposed to keep it for themselves. So that could be part of it. That's really my best guess. I don't know anything more than that. I do know that that could have been something that, maybe not right away, but eventually Israel, the way they interacted with other nations, led to a lot of problems. Not because the other nations were necessarily an issue, it was that the Israelites were kind of taking what the other nations were doing and adopting that and doing it themselves, and it didn't go out very well. So that's for free, by the way. I experienced freedom from a particular sin for a while, but then I seem to fall back in. How do I finally break free? That's a good question. And I think a lot of people have that experience. And I know that I also have had that experience. Part of me wants to say that it's a discipline thing, but that makes it sound like it's all on you. And I'm not sure that it is all on you. I mean, part of it definitely is, because it's a choice, right? When you're free, you are free, but you got to live that. And you get set free, but you make that decision to keep going back. So I think there's a point where, yes, God sets you free, but there's also a point where you have that choice. Am I gonna stay put, or am I gonna move forward following him to freedom? So I think it's both parts, a salvation on God's part and also a discipline for us. So I hope that helped. Great questions, guys. I was not sure I was ready for some of those, but I just wanna close with a thought. What would it be like for us as a church, for our community, for our world as a whole, even, if we, as a body of believers, decided, you know what, we are going to be a people who remember what God did, but more than just remembering, we're going to be in awe. We're going to live in awe. Like, wow, that is what you did for me? That's how far you went? Wow. Wow. What if we took that truth and we lived in that awe, but we not only just took that truth and were beneficiaries of freedom, but what if we were a people who set out to let the world know that because of Jesus, freedom is within reach? Let's be that kind of people. The kind of people that remember in awe what God has done, but set out to tell the world, because of Jesus, freedom is within reach. Will you guys pray with me? God, I thank you for who you are and just the fact that you set us free. God, I pray that you'd be with us as we celebrate that today and help us to keep that in the front of our minds and to just walk with you. And God, I pray for the people in this room who might be stuck. God, that you would walk with them through those valleys and anything that they're stuck in and show them the way to live that free life that you offer. We praise you and thank you in Jesus' name.